Welcome to Shop Talk Live, episode number 229. This week we're going to try something a little bit different. It's going to be just Barry and I talking about the beginning of our woodworking journeys and trying to put ourselves in the mindset of someone just starting out in woodworking. And in order to do that, we challenged ourselves to come up with shop budgets with only a $1,000 budget. It might seem like a lot to some, that might seem like way too little to others. That's the number we came up with. While we're doing this, think about how you might go about setting up a shop for $1,000. It's a lot harder than you might think, but it's fun and it's kind of grounding. Head on over to the show notes at shoptalklive.com, where we will have our full budgets broken down in spreadsheet forms. And also, it would be great if you could submit your $1,000 budgets. Just post a link to a Google Sheets spreadsheet as a comment in the show notes to this episode. They might get flagged as spam, but I'll go through and make sure that they all get approved after the fact. All of that to say, we've got a different episode for you. Trying new things here and there. We'll be back to the same format that you're used to next episode. We just wanted to change it up a little bit. Let us know how you like it. You gotta change it up every now and then, right? On with the show after a word from our sponsors. Whether you're working in the shop or on the job site, it's not a debate that dust extraction is incredibly important. That's why Festool USA has continued to innovate ways to deliver top-tier dust extraction solutions, as best seen in Festool's new CT48 AC. This machine is designed to capture high volumes of dust and keep the job progressing, with its 12.7-gallon capacity, and continue operating at its peak efficiency with its automatic cleaning mechanism. The versatile CT48 AC syncs with Festool tools via Bluetooth for seamless operation and is also OSHA Table 1 compliant for materials containing silica dust, and it is well suited for a diverse set of job site tasks while limiting downtime for emptying filter bags due to its large capacity. Backed by the company's 3-year wear and tear warranty, the CT48 AC is built for the toughest demands. For information, visit festoolusa.com/fall2020.
If you've been waiting to become a subscriber to Fine Woodworking, now's the time. Follow us on social and be sure to visit finewoodworking.com frequently, and we will have some pretty incredible sales coming your way this holiday season.
So I figured I'd take this episode into the shop to be germane.
But I could see a teeny tiny bandsaw.
Yeah, it's a little wee guy. Little 9-inch dude.
Yeah.
It is.
How's that working out for you, by the way?
So when I bought it, I knew it was going to be underpowered and it couldn't handle big cuts. And then I tried cutting some, it was 12 quarter poplar, 20 inches long. It took 5.5 minutes to cut that, I knew that
12 quarter poplar though. I mean,
5.5 minutes.
That's worst case scenario though.
Right. And I bought it going, you're not going to do worst case scenario. And then, but then you get the saw, you're going to go, oh, put whatever into it. You know?
So we have a Nissan Versa.
Yeah.
Which I've told you the functions or the features of this car is it's a car.
Yeah. That's exactly features. What you said when I was considering buying one.
And, if the first thing we did on the test drive was to drive up that big, huge hill by the office,
yeah,
there's no way I would have bought that car. But that's worst case scenario.
Yeah. Exactly. So I just,
otherwise it's fine.
Right. So this thing, it's fine. You know, I regularly make rips. I hate the dust, but that's not the bandsaw's fault. That's, you know, my dust collection's fault, well, my non-dust collection's fault, but it works well for what it does. It's frustrating when I want it to do more, but yeah, that's few and far between. I don't know if I'm ever, I think I have an upcoming project, maybe with 8-quarter oak. And I'm kind of curious how that's going to work out. Cause 5.5 minutes at a saw is 3 years. And you're not just making I wasn't just making one long cut. I was ripping parts to size ish. And so that was almost an hour at the bandsaw.
That's when you set up Netflix right next to the bandsaw.
Well, you space out. And you go, don't space out. There's a moving saw blade. Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's the space out. Cause that's when Mike bought his saw stop. was when he was doing a lot of repetitive, like, I'm making 200 Kumiko blocks and I'm spacing out, so I need a bit of insurance. And yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah, because this thing's underpowered, but it will still take my thumb. You know, like, it's not...
it's powerful enough to ruin your day, week, month, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we thought that we would do something different. Mm-hmm. You and I have been talking mm-hmm. about this for a really, really long time.
Mm-hmm. Just the two of us. That's all I can think. I don't think it's ever been you and me on the pod. You and that's all I got. That's my contribution. Yeah, we've been talking about this. Has it been 2 years? A year and a half?
It's been a while. So for the audience, you and I at one point had the idea to do a totally different podcast.
Yes.
And it was beginner friendly and total, like, we did one episode and it was kind of really fun and bonkers, but my full-time job would need to be that thing and that's it.
Right, because it was like not properly. You put a lot of work into it, and
it was pretty like really produced.
Yeah, like it wasn't just running audio. There were like cuts and splices and transitions, and
yeah,
I think a song. I think you made a song.
I did make a song. But we quickly realized that this just we don't have time for that, mm-hmm. and. The problem is we kind of shelved a whole bunch of really great ideas mm-hmm. in the process. So when we were trying to get an episode together for this week, and there's a lot going on, all of a sudden it was, what if we, Barry and I, do our $1,000 shop episode?
Which is cool. And it's cool. It was a fun little exercise.
Honestly, for the listeners out there, that didn't turn it off right now because they're like, $1,000 shop. Yeah. I have a $40,000 shop. this is a fun exercise to sit there and try and think, if you had $1,000, how would you budget that shop, or how would you budget that money to get going in woodworking?
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, woodworking is not only difficult, it's expensive. So that's two strikes. I was thinking about hobbies, different hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is a weaver. She's a production weaver. So she's going full bore. And she's probably got maybe maybe $4,000 worth of equipment.
That's it.
And that's her living, though. You know? And she teaches classes, and the price of entry is, for a little loom, a couple $100. And you can get going.
Yeah.
I've been, much to Barry's chagrin, I keep harassing him about stuff. I've been getting into hiking. And, like, the gear that you buy with that, while it is expensive, it is not woodworking expensive.
It's not a table saw, you know? Like, yeah. It's... So I'm with you, and it's not like it's done with the tools. Like, then you got to buy wood, you know? And we kind of gave ourselves an out. We're like, don't include sandpaper. That's a consumable. So lowering the barrier to entry, I think, is important. But I wouldn't call my list like a DIY woodworking list, you know? It's not, or like a wood, like it's not a DIY shop. Like, I have hand tools on here and sharpening stones. So I think it's more in line with what readers expect from the magazine, or like how you and I work. That's also how I geared it. You know, it's not just like, I don't have a doweling jig on here. I do have a pocket hole jig, but like, it's not.
You gotta have a pocket hole jig.
I had to delete some other stuff. Like, I pared down one thing.
Like, gotta get room for the pocket hole.
Well,
jig,
it was
man.
That or really long clamps, and I don't want to dive into it too early.
Yeah, yeah. It's for me. I don't think I. this is representative of what of the equipment that I would have had a year into my woodworking journey.
Okay.
So, I don't think I'm making with this list. You might have me beat then, because with this list, I don't think I am making. I'm not giving Tim Coleman a run for his money.
Tim and I could trade that current said, shops.
That said, with a $100,000 list, I'm not giving Tim Coleman a run for his money. So
maybe if I hire Tim Coleman.
So yeah, so this is what this episode's going to be about. We're not going to do the normal Shop Talk Live, answer 3 to 5 questions, go over the stupid thing we did. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of that, but, this is a different episode. We're going to try something out. Let us know if it's working for you or if it's not, and we'll probably do it from time to time regardless.
Yeah, this but, was, so when you were talking about this being a fun little experiment or like a thought exercise.
Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah. And if you don't work at a woodworking magazine, this is a really fun thing to do in meetings when like that Zoom call that you don't want to pay attention to. But it's also fun to do when you work at a woodworking magazine and you don't want to pay attention in that meeting, just as viable. So I think across the board, this is cool to do.
We just don't have to hide it.
That's true. Yeah. We're monetizing our distraction.
I don't think that our mental wanderings are any different, more or less, than any one of our listeners. We just don't have to make excuses. What you doing? Oh, I'm just thinking about how I'm going to pull this mortise and tenon off.
Yeah.
Keep it up. Thanks, boss. By the way, boss, how am I going to pull this mortise and tenon?
Yeah, exactly. Mike. No.
All right. So we thought it would be interesting to do one little bit before we dive into our lists. I am boring, and I got into woodworking the same way that probably 80% of the people out there got into woodworking. Got a house, moved into a house, watched this old house a lot or whatever, but moved into a house, built a thing. The first thing I built was, well, I built Katie a sewing desk really, really early on after my parents bought me a table saw. I declared I wanted a table saw. My parents bought me like a horrible, dangerous table saw. I built a sewing desk. I did all sorts of really, really bad things with it, with the table saw, dangerous things. And then I kind of set that aside. I think all the tools went into storage while I moved into an apartment. When we bought a house though, the tools came back and it was, oh, okay. I can be like my dad and build things now. And, started building. I built like a little kitchen counter thing out of a cut up ladder and pallets and an old coffee table. And it made Katie like super, super happy. And that's generally my goal. And I just kept going.
Yeah.
My story is fairly average. I don't know how you got into woodwork. We talk a lot and I still don't know how you got into woodworking.
It was the same way. So I had just come back. So I lived in Thailand for a year. I was 24 to 25 and I came back and it was like Thailand kind of happened quickly because I did college and then grad school and then worked for a little bit and then went to Thailand. So when I came back, it was like, I have my own apartment that I can like do stuff with, you know?
Were you living in like a hostel or something in Thailand or?
No, it was, I lived on the school's campus, like in the same dorms as the college kids. The teachers had their own floor.
You were teaching English?
Yeah, sorry, teaching English. Okay. Lived on campus and like I thought I was going to be there longer than a year, but I wasn't sure it was going to be 10. And I surely wasn't going to like get into things in the dorm room, you know? Yeah. So I grew up around my dad and grandpa building stuff, but it wasn't like it was a possibility, but it wasn't there for me yet. I didn't have the impetus. That happened when I came back and I had my own place. And like, you can start doing stuff, you know, like you can make it happen for an X. I made us like shelving, open shelving for spices. And it was a MDF like desk, like, or not like, like a melamine desk that we found out in the hallway of my apartment, which was much less classy than hers. And I just took a jigsaw, sawed it.
It was in the hallway. It wasn't in the alley. It wasn't.
Right. But it was disassembled. It was in the hallway. Like, it didn't look good, you know? Okay. I think someone might have been moving out. I don't remember. But like, I took a jigsaw, sawed it into rough rectangles.
What if they were moving in?
And that would have been rough. Glad nobody talked to each other.
Their desk is gone, and you cut it up.
But it was a spice rack afterward. It was so much cooler. And that's how it started. It was like, it was building stuff for our apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And
where were you doing it in the apartment?
So I worked on some. Like, I modified some skateboards in mine, but that was small. I think I did it at her place. She had a deck, like a very small 5x8 deck. Mm-hmm. And then there was a storage shed, which was probably 10 or 12 feet long, but half of that was boxes and storage for when she moved, like eventually moved out. And the other half was open. It was maybe 3 or 4 feet wide.
Okay.
And so I probably just did like sawhorses and what's that word? Plywood for like a worktop. And I don't remember exactly how I did that, but that's how it started. And eventually we moved in together. That half of the storage shed became my shop and the spillover into the deck. And I just like make it, like I made a desk. I made a rack for drawers for these plastic bins where like the skeleton, like the carcass, I guess, fell apart. But at some point I took and that was all chop saw and pocket screws. At some point I like started to take a parallel track or hard left into hand tool stuff. And it had to have been Chris Schwartz. I think I was reading something and he said, you'll never find something flat and square at the home center, or like you have a 5% chance of finding it. And that got me very mad because I hadn't thought about it. You know, like I knew boards were twisty and not lining up, but I hadn't connected the dots that like, oh, people make these things square. Like they, you know, mill them with tools. You don't just kind of take what Home Depot gives you. And so that's when I kind of started getting more into hand tools. And then I found Peter Follinsby and I was a lost cause. It was my track was set.
And you haven't been able to pull up since.
So same story, but at some point I was mad that Lowe's wasn't giving me high quality lumber.
And I was paying $4.
It was.
I didn't know all that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like an ex-girlfriend story. Nobody wants to hear that, except for the podcast listeners now had to suffer through it. So you mentioned that your list is what you would have had a year into your woodworking journey.
Yeah.
I think this is, knowing what I know now, this is what I wish I'd had a year in.
I just looked at my list like you, it's like on your screen, you're pointing at my list. And I was like, huh. Yeah. There's a lot of knowing what I know now in anything like this. Yeah. But maybe that will, it's not going to help anyone because people can tell you things countless times and you're not going to listen or learn until you're ready to listen or learn them. For example, I am remembering right now, If they ever make a movie of my life, mm-hmm. which would be very, very boring and bad, there will be a point where I realize that nothing is square in my shop. Or I have no true reference for square in my shop. And the camera will be spinning around and motion blur and everything will be happening because all of a sudden Ben realizes he has no frame of reference for 90 degrees that he can trust. And like, I just freaked out. Like, this was like, I can't woodwork until I get this square. Mm-hmm. If I don't get a stair at, I can't woodwork.
I did the same thing you did.
Yeah.
I was really into vintage. I still am. Well, less so, but I'm into old tools, you know? But when I would get a square and it wasn't square, it was just like, why did I buy this? And it was the same, no, buy a Starrett. And it wasn't buy a good square, it was buy a Starrett. It was get something reliably square, because things trickle down from that. So well, I'm totally with you.
We totally get hung up, and I'm entirely guilty of it as well. It's like, no, just buy a Starrett.
Mm-hmm.
But there should be an asterisk that if $100 isn't going to cut into your grocery budget,
yeah,
buy a Starrett.
There are used ones.
I know, but then there's like, what if it's you? What if they're selling it because it's the worst Starrett ever?
You
know,
you got the dud.
Like, this is this was and you know me, I'm meticulous about certain things, and that was like my chosen point right there. Was like, I want 90 degrees. Like, that's, and I'm freaking out about it, but we constantly say buy a stair or buy a blue spruce or whatever. It's important. It is important. And they are nice. They're the best. And I love my Starrett.
Yeah.
But it can be done without having a Starrett. And I think I would get it in my head that the $100 square was the only thing I could do. And I can't afford $100. I mean, for a long time, for a significant part of my woodworking, the only way I bought tools was by selling woodworking things, selling musical instruments. And I was, you know, in the middle of this transition, this life transition. So I have like, you know, a microphone preamp that's $2,000. And it's like, how many tools can I buy for that? Boom.
Yeah.
Ironically, I'm thinking about selling my Domino so that I could buy a guitar amp now. So I don't know what's going on with me.
Have you used PEC squares?
I have one and I don't like it.
Okay. That's what I thought. Because there's a company on eBay that sells blems. Like blem 12 inch squares, and you know, they guarantee accurate to within however thousands or blah blah blah. Why don't you like yours?
My it's a 4 inch double square, and I just can't get enough purchase on it to tighten it down. Okay, like it'll tighten down, but it won't stay.
Gotcha. All right.
And mine might be a blem or whatever, but, we're talking about squares for squares. What did I have? So I did my list in like three sections. It was like new, this is what I would buy. And then I was being optimistic and that was $2,700. So I was overshooting it by a lot. Then I went second option. I whittled it down more. That was $1,500. My third option, supposed to be $1,000. I'm sorry. I know you've been really, really good. I'm at 1017.
I'm at 1,000 even right now. It may bump it up because I have that blem PEC square. I may just put like you stare it.
I had a Johnson square, which a while back.
That the one with the yellow handle? No, that's Swanson.
It's black. You can get them in most hardware stores.
Oh.
And a while back, I did a long time ago when I first started working here, I did a video of showing how to check if a square is square. And one of them was a Johnson. And it was like, it was a pretty solid square. It was true. And, it locked right. It felt okay. It didn't have the heft and the.
I trust my Starrett every time I take it off.
I don't even think about it. But the Johnson was fine, and it's $10.
Whoa.
Yeah. So like, I tested a Harbor Freight one, which was a little bit cheaper, and the difference between the Johnson and the Harbor Freight was significant.
It so not to put too not to emphasize Starrett too much because every time. So you know how when you have a kid at the playground and you're talking to other grown-ups, but like you're constantly looking over to make sure your kid's okay? Every time we say Starrett, I look at mine up on my tool wall, which is right on the other side of my computer, and it's like, are you okay? Like that's how much it means to me. I'm watching it like my kid at the playground, not a kid, my kid.
I've got something in between my stare and this and the camera because I don't want you to see it. It's my stare, not for your eye. For my eyes,
there are many like it, but this one is mine. All right. So, what'd you do for power tools? Because these would make or break my list. Be like, oh my god, now I'm suddenly $50, $100 over. I need to figure stuff out. So how'd you do
it? So I went, this isn't going at all how we planned it.
I know we can,
but we that's can okay.
Start. Okay. All
that's
right.
Okay. That's fine. I just wanted to point that out for both of us. Cause at one point we were going to say that at the end, and say, wait, were we gonna, and yeah, all right. Because Barry and I did pre-production on this one and
we did.
It lasted 3 minutes.
I wasn't trying to totally erase that. I was just curious. Like I wanted to get to the strategy. Like,
yeah.
Like you got these power tools. Why?
And this is what it's about. I think it's about strategy more than specifics. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you know how I said I had the three lists?
Yeah.
List one and two have a bandsaw and a planer. List three has no bandsaw and no planer. And I lied. When we discussed this the other day, I have a $300 allocated for a used table saw.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cause that was like that was cool. You got that in there. Cause I don't have one and it's really like starting woodworking without a table saw sounds hard or starting to get serious.
A part of me really wanted to keep a table saw off the list. And honestly, a part of me still wants to, cause I don't have a router in this list. A part of me still wants to replace the table saw with like a budget track saw and a router.
Mm-hmm.
But a bandsaw and a planer would be the first thing I would buy now. But I still cannot wrap my head around how it can be the first thing you would buy for me at the beginning of the journey I took. Where, honestly, if you're limited to a $1,000 budget, you're probably limited to plywood.
Oh.
For material. So, or I was.
That's right. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did talk about this for like, yeah.
I was. For years, I mean, I was plywood centric. I think I even remember saying, I don't see a point where I'm not building with plywood, where I am building with hardwood. And
I remember thinking, I don't see a project that I'd want to make without pocket screws. Like, I don't need to ever not use pocket screws. I remember exactly where I was when I thought this. So I totally get the evolution.
Yeah. It's your mindset changes throughout it. So, my main... I have a table saw for $300 and I checked our Craigslist area. At least you can get a pretty solid table saw with a riving knife for $300.
With a riving knife.
Yes. Like, cause that's me, you know.
Yeah.
Your people might think that kids, those kids and their riving knives, but I'm not, it's like buying a car without a seatbelt for me. Mm-hmm. Nope.
I'm with you.
What else did I have? I had, besides that, I had $100 allocated for a nice Makita, skill saw. Brand?
Circ saw?
Circular saw?
Thank you.
You forgot plywood. I forgot Circ saw.
I'm going into Home Depot today. And you're like, where's a brand? I have $100.
I've worked at hardware stores too much to know that they would not be that surprised. I had a customer come in looking for the tube section.
What?
And I asked them, what's the tube section? you know, tubes where water comes out. I was like, oh, plumbing. Well, what are you looking for? How can I help you? And they go, just show me where the tubes are. I'll know it when I see it.
Yes. Yes, you will.
Have at it.
That's the system that takes care of your human waste. So go ahead. Then you deal with it.
And supplies you.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
There's two potable ends.
Water. Yeah.
And you don't want to get them mixed up. So
man.
Good luck with the tubes. All right. So you with the wah, wah. So I had a Circ saw, a Makita Circ saw, and I'll add on to that. It's an accessory, but $40 for the Craig Rip Cut.
Is that the guide?
Yeah, I've got one around here. Yeah, I do have one around here. Yes, it's like the it's the extended edge guide.
Thanks. Yeah.
And it's infuriating, but it's irreplaceable to me. And to this day, I mean, I have a pretty stout shop. Mm-hmm. I still have the Craig Rip Cut over in the corner because it is every now and then you get a sheet of plywood, a 4x8 sheet of plywood, and you want to rip or cross cut or whatever 18 inches off the end of it or the side of it. That is the best way of doing it. Cause I am not a fan of,
no,
I don't even have my shop set up in a way that I can, deal with full sheets of plywood.
So, oh yeah. Cause your outfeed's kind of small and like, yeah,
my infeed is where my head is right now. And, I maybe in a pinch I could. I don't know. Shaper Origin Plus Workstation is a unique all-in-one workspace solution that applies CNC precision to projects that are beyond the scope of traditional machines. The complete cutting system from Shaper allows woodworkers to cut end grain joinery with ease, apply efficient fixturing on small or oddly shaped workpieces, bring precision cutting to any job site, design right on the tool without needing to know programming language, digitally archive templates for simplified workflows, and imply engravings and logos with confidence on finished workpieces. Streamline your operations today. Save $50 if you order the complete system at shapertools.com or from one of their authorized North American retailers.
I remember the first time I tried steam bending. I was overwhelmed and didn't know where to begin until I read Michael Fortune's article, The 7 Secrets of Steam Bending. People often ask how they can become better woodworkers. I tell them to join Fine Woodworking Unlimited and learn from the experts. With a membership, you can learn at your own pace and discover inspirational techniques and projects in the comfort of your home.
What are your machines?
So I got a 9-inch benchtop bandsaw. There's one, if you want you new, there's one from Grizzly. This one I got for $95. And that was without the stand that was supposed to come with it. And I did have to replace the tires and maybe something else. Maybe the drive pulley. Mm-hmm. But that's it, you know? So it was cheap and considering, and I had to make a fence because the other fence was just terrible, but incredibly useful, you know? Like I don't want to go to working without it.
Yeah.
And I did get a router. I got a mid-size router with two bases because get the plunge base, you know, like being able to mortise with it is fantastic. Cause I don't have a drill press on here. And I also don't like mortising with a drill press. That'll drill a chop thing.
I've done it like twice and I do not enjoy it. A lot of that probably has to do with the fact that I had no concept of sharp chisels at the time.
That's it. So unless you're doing a huge mortise, I think your chisels need to be screaming sharp in order for that to work well. So anyway, router with plunge base and the fixed base. I think those are my only two power tools. And where it kind of falls down is making square cuts on the end, which you get with your table saw, which is marvelous, like on the end of a board. I do like have a hand. Cross cutting. Yeah. And I do have that with my handsaw. Like I do have a handsaw, but when you're starting out, you probably don't have a great chop saw, which is my kind of justification. Cause I never got a good cross cut off of my crap chop saw. You know?
So I went to, I don't shop at pawn stores anymore, but I, at the time, was a frequenter. Mm-hmm. And I think I got a $25 chop saw, and I still have it. And there's a reason why it stays in the garage and not in my shop, because it's really only good for cutting 2x4s if I'm building a chicken coop.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I came down on the chop saw, because in the beginning that was essential to me, you know, a chop saw. But thinking back, like, the quality just wasn't good, you know?
Not for furniture grade.
Right.
Things.
Right. And I'm not sure if using a handsaw is going to be any better, but I'm not sure it's going to be any worse. At least you develop handsaw skills. I guess
the good thing is, it at first it might not be better, but it's going to improve.
Yeah.
And the $20 chop saw is not.
Yeah, exactly. What did you have to cut that you maybe otherwise wouldn't? Like, I had a full set of chisels, and I had to make room in the budget. I'm like, nope, you're getting a quarter inch and maybe an inch or three quarters, and you're buying them off of eBay.
So to get down to $1,000, I had to, like, hand tools, I still have the Stanley four-piece sweetheart set.
Okay, yeah.
And that, you know, I could easily mix that out with a Narek set, or there are definitely other chisels out there that could fill that gap.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the Stanley sweethearts, and I really like them. So there was no reason to go elsewhere. I have a Veritas small crosscut saw.
Okay.
Because I think a back saw is just absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
The thing that I was shocked that I cut out of the budget was a marking gauge.
So what's your workaround? Just using a pencil or?
Using a chisel. Like, the only thing that I could be like, God, you got to have a marking gauge for is dovetails. And using a chisel and the workpiece as a spacer, you can easily get around having a marking gauge for that. There are ways around not having a marking gauge.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I don't see a way around not having a good chisel, you know?
So then maybe I cheated because I have marking gauges on my list, but then I put $0, make your own. Is that cheating? I don't know.
No, because I have a make your own bandsaw. So
just a niece on the other side turning the wheels, you know.
He got that thing.
Did you have any plans?
It's expensive for a used. Mm-hmm. So I a good eBay find, number five, Stanley number five.
That's exactly
$60. I budgeted $60.
Oh, you're really good. I budgeted $40. Like, make it work.
You could do it. You could certainly do it. Yeah.
You may not end up with a Stanley, was my thought. But like, my Craftsman is sitting there, and I use that. I did not put a Hawk blade in it, but it works great. So yeah, but I have the same thing, a number five, a jack plane, you know, something that you can make work.
Yeah. What else did you have for hand tools?
I have the number five. I have I have a back saw, but it's the, and I'm going to butcher this name, Gyokochu, the Japanese saw brand that's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 311, their Sunchild. Mm-hmm. This is the nickname. And so I had a Ryoba, like, that, you know, you get two blades in one, a rip and a cross cut. But as soon as I put the bandsaw on, it's like, no, never make a long rip in your life again. You know, like, it's just, it's an exercise in frustration. So back saw, because I think you can have success much faster with a back saw than you can with like a Ryoba, you know, like a floppy guy who. And I can still make curved cuts with a back saw, and I have. But I think I'm with you. A back saw is a good call. a coping saw, and two chisels.
Two? What size?
Definitely a quarter inch, and then an inch or three quarter, something wider than a quarter inch, but definitely the quarter. And that, and so I opened up money in my budget. Like I got $40 back, maybe 50. Just, you know, go to eBay, find some two used chisels, you know.
Okay.
Because even now, I think the benefit of me having a set of chisels is I can go from the dull one to a sharp one. You know, very rarely is it like, very rarely is it I need this size, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Guilty. Yeah.
It's why I don't buy a 3/8 inch chisel, because I know that it'll be another chisel until I, you know, sharpen.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So we have broached the subject.
Yes.
Sharpening.
Yeah. I did an Eclipse honing guide. So the side clamp guy, it'll handle chisels and plane blades and oil stones. There's one from Norton, which is, I had it for a long time. It's a beautiful size. It's like 11 and a half inches long, 2.5 inches wide, and it's a double. It's a coarse and a fine. Mm-hmm. So that and a strop. I'm like, you will be fine starting out. You know, you may not be screaming sharp, but you will. So my work kit's kind of like using home center pine or like using solid wood. You'll be sharp enough for most solid wood, you know?
Okay.
How about you?
I had forgotten about a honing guide. but I had like the DMT diamond paste set,
which is
$47. I'm a fan of diamond paste. I just use the 3 micron on different substrates, but I think the $47 and some MDF to put the diamond paste on, that's pretty much, you can do it. Like Ben Brunick, that's his sharpening system.
No kidding.
And yeah, and well, you,
he's a full-on pro.
Until I can out anything Ben Brunick,
yeah,
it's gonna have to work for me. It's not gonna be my excuse. So and I dedicated $20 for glass and sandpaper for grinding, you know, tasks.
Glass?
Yeah, you know, float glass or something.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Oh, grinding. Yeah. I gotcha.
Because that's one thing. It's like if you're getting used tools, you got to be able to sharpen them.
That's smart. I did not budget.
Just no way around that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else?
How about your bench? Or did you budget for a bench?
I did budget for a bench. Mine is, where is it? This is solid audio here. Okay, mine is a solid core door and sawhorses for $50.
Yeah, so I did $150 for a full-on Nicholson bench. And I'm,
okay,
because it's a fun project, you know? But my first bench, and not that it was good, but it was like IKEA cabinets, some 2x6s on edge to be like risers or 2x10s, I forget, and then like a melamine countertop.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably a little slippery in hindsight, but that's easily a place where I think I could knock like $75 or $100 off. Because I like your idea. The solid core door and the sawhorse is just, you can knock it down.
My first bench was 4 layers of 3/4 inch plywood.
Whoa.
Glued up, and it wasn't as flat as I wanted it to be. And that was back when I cared about a flat workbench. Now I'd be like, yeah, it's great. but it was on some like $30 Harbor Freight, the metal sawhorses.
Yeah.
And they were great. And there's a part of me that wishes I had that bench back because it was so heavy and solid, but it wasn't flat. And now my main bench is a solid core door with a layer of 3/4-inch plywood on top of it.
And you bolted it to the wall, right?
Yeah, it's like built into the wall of my shop. It's not going anywhere. It doesn't move. It doesn't. It's great.
Yeah.
I think the key there is to not do like your weekend handyman style built into the wall bench, where you've got like shelves underneath filled with stuff. And if you're going to build it into the bench or into the wall, do like a half of a Nicholson, like I did, which is it's legs that come down, but the back is bolted into the wall. Everything's there. A apron, which I go back and forth on my, I have a 2x10 or 2x8 apron that is at times too wide. But every now and then it's like, oh, I'm really glad that this is wide enough for, hold fasts and edge planing.
Are hold fasts on your list?
No.
Yeah, me neither. I deleted them and I was really bummed about it. Yeah, like, you're going to be an old-timey woodworker.
You're big on hold fasts.
I do love them. But okay, so because I wanted room for clamps, like room in the budget, and this was really hard. Like, what in the world is a starter set of clamps? You know, like, really? Here's a shot. Yeah. Like, okay, so in the keeping with the theme of this shop works, you know, you can get some. When it comes to clamps, like, you're not building a table without longer clamps. And that's why I added the pocket screw jig. Is like you can do big glue ups with pocket screws.
True. But yeah. I remember looking at we know and love Mark Spagnuolo. I remember looking at his wall of clamps and thinking that's the goal. And then I added up how much that wall of jet parallel clamps would be and realized that honestly, I bet you still there is more money in Mark Spagnuolo's wall of jet parallel clamps than I have in all of my shop.
Oh, I bet. And those parallel jaw clamps are wonderful. Every time I put a clamp on the list, it was like, we says it's parallel jaw.
They're so wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love them. And I've always wanted just a huge supply of parallel clamps. And I thought, that's the goal. And then I realized you're looking at $500 to get a decent supply of clamps. Yeah. And honestly, you know, you remember those Gray Bessies at the old shop? The little ones, the short ones?
Yeah.
I have them.
Those are marvelous.
Well, I forget that I have them. I don't use them. I have two 48-inch Jorgensen parallel jaw clamps that Mike gave me. Whoa. Like he was cleaning his shop before a shoot and there was just stuff outside and he was like, you take any of that you want. I was like, you know, and I never use those. I need to put them in the garage. Like those are ones I want to keep.
Mm-hmm.
The Gray Bessies need to go back to whatever fine woodworking shop happens one day. Yeah. And, but I never use them. I use F clamps nonstop. They are right next to my bench. They are right under my hand tools because I use them all the time.
So that I have F style clamps and two wooden hand screws. See, that was for you.
Yeah.
And for edge planing, but also for you. So what did you do for clamps?
All right. 6/12-inch. I'm sorry. It's hard to beat Harbor Freight for clamps.
Mm-hmm.
6/12-inch Harbor Freight clamps for $24. 2 36-inch Harbor Freight bar clamps for $24. 2 Harbor Freight pipe clamps and the pipes that would go with them. That's $54 in my budget. And then I have 2 used wooden hand screws that I refuse to pay more than $10 for a piece. So
I think I used your, I did 30. Just in case people aren't as good at negotiating as you. I know, because I'm a sucker. those prices are incredible for clamps.
That and so the 12-inch Harbor Freights, I think, early on in my journey, I bought probably about 8. I still use them all the time. There's 6 in use on my bench right now.
All right. So I think I may take money out of the bench, and I'm not going to adjust the budget now. Cause are we posting these?
Yeah. We're going to post these.
I'm not changing the list. Maybe I will, but I'm tempted to take 100 or 75 out of the bench and put it towards clamps because the joke that you can never have too many clamps is like, I love dad jokes. Yeah. No, just, I cannot with that joke, but having the right number of clamps is and having the clamps that you want for the work you're doing. Like F-style clamps are not fun for panel glue ups, you know? And in my head, I thought, just make like a board with some wedging action and do like, you know, like you're an 18th century Frenchman. And I've done that. It's cool. You feel awesome. But that can be a hard sell. So
but you're right. And I'll put it in the clamp conversation. I've got $40 for a Craig R3 Jr.
Ditto.
Pocket hole jig because, man, you can clamp anything with pocket holes. I even know a guy, I think Mike Powers, Turning Sawdust into Groceries on Instagram. I'm almost positive that he like bought one box of pocket hole screws like 10 years ago and just he uses them until the glue's dry and pulls them out. And it's like,
it's brilliant.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason. Why keep them in there?
No. I'm with you. Yeah, I'm totally with you.
They're clamps. They're clamps, man.
That's why I have that on here.
It's only the only reason to stay away from pocket hole screws. I'm sorry. Mike's not here. Nobody else is here to give us. They're not going to listen anyways. There's the only reason to not use pocket holes is pride.
I agree. Schwarz uses them on his chairs. On some,
in the
chairs.
Back chair.
Yeah,
And
I'm pretty sure they're as clamps until he puts like a second. So it's this end grain kind of glue up, and the pocket screws hold these pieces in place, and then another long grain part goes on top, and that's stronger than the screws, you know, that base glue up. So,
but early on, I got it in my head that you can't use metal anything in anything woodworking. You are a hack if you can't run your woodworking through a metal detector at the end of the day or something. I don't know. And the more I do it, the more it's like, that's not what's important. You know what's important to me now that I've gotten that junk out of my system, is making things that my family can use and I like the look of, and doing it in a fashion where I'm having fun doing it and relaxing and focusing on the things that need to be focused on and not spending 400 hours. My next project is likely going to have a lot of pocket holes in it.
No kidding.
Yeah. You know what, man? Maybe it comes back to that eyeing up that domino and seeing a Fender Deluxe Tone Master in there.
Are you going to build an amp?
No.
Oh. I care less now. Wait,
there's only so much punishment I can take. No, but it's like I see the domino and I use it twice a year. And one of those times is to make like elongated oval holes to put chisels in. I can easily justify getting rid of that now. I don't know. I still haven't totally come to terms with it, but pocket holes and mortises are interchangeable to me most of the time. If I need the strength of a mortise and tenon joint, I'm not doing this for production. I can spend some time with a router and a table saw or whatever and do honest to God floating tenons, regular tenons, whatever. I don't need the domino. They're really nice though. Holes, my next furniture project I'm planning is an Enfield cupboard, but I want to do it like
red.
I might do I might do plywood sides.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I dig that about the Enfield cupboard. Because the form is still a sharp form. Like, that is a, I hate this word, or it's overused, like timeless. You know, like that shape, yeah, the portions, that's going to look well whether dovetailed or pocket screwed together. It's going to look good.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this.
Okay. The CDX is a stretch. Are you kidding me? Painted furniture?
Yeah.
That's me. I have, so my tool chest is over there. And it has all my finishing supplies. And there's like a whole wing of it for milk paint and then some acrylic. I am all about painted furniture.
Beginners just hate the idea of painted furniture. And I was there too. Yeah. I was there too. I was on the fence about staining things. And I think I've come off the fence about staining things, but now choose to use higher grade wood that I don't have to stain. And maybe that's for financial reasons or whatever. But again, at the end of the day, if your partner doesn't like the thing you made.
Yeah.
And I remember Katie, one of the first big things I made were these, bookcases that just, oh, they were going to be the greatest bookcases ever. They weren't. And, but I stained them. Katie wanted to paint them, and I was like, why would you do this to me? Why would you do this to me? I'm making something out of wood. Yeah. And she's like, there's too much wood in the house. We got wood floors. We got wood table. We got wood. Like, can we have like something else? And I was like, no, I'll stain it, but I'm not painting it. And now I should have painted them. And
I don't know when I became okay with painting. Staining, I'm on the fence about. Because I can't do it well. You know, like I'm not Mike Maselli. Paint's kind of much more democratic. So, but it's that desire for wooden things to look like wood. You're right. It's very similar to the pocket screw.
So, I'm realizing something about our lists to get back on topic.
Gosh, what?
Neither one of us wound up with a planer.
I know. It bummed me right out.
I know, me too. So, like, can we say that a $1,200 list would probably include the planer?
Yes. Yeah, because then I think you get really flexible with design.
Yeah.
You know, and thicknessing wood by hand, you can do it with that number five you and I have, but you're going to hate it.
Yeah, it's not a fun task. And I think you do it once.
Right. Yeah. Here's how it's done.
Unless you turn in a hand tool guy.
Right. But then you're getting like a scrub plane or another jack with a super cambered blade. Go on.
I remember early on thinking, oh, maybe I'll like do everything with hand tools because that'll save money. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at like how much good planes were and I was like, wait, this joiner plane is $375. Yeah. And I could buy a jointer for that.
I definitely would add a planer. I'd probably do better on clamps and a planer for sure. Because then like you can buy project boards, right? From craft stores and home centers, like half inch poplar. Mm-hmm. Those are terribly expensive. I don't think they're ever really wide.
No.
So I'm a planer for sure.
I remember making a box. It's a nice box for my mother for Christmas one year. She has a rosary collection, and it was like specifically for her collection. Mm-hmm. And it's a fine looking box, and I was able to get around the fact that all of the stock was 3/4 inch thick by making it. So the top was inset in to grooves in the side so that only like 3/8 inch of the sides showed.
Clever.
And then when you open the box though, you're like, murr, murr, because all of a sudden the stock is super, super thick and it's a beautiful box and my mother loves it. And that's what matters. It's just when I opened it, I was always like, I wish that wasn't so thick. It just looked off to me. I think that's when I bought my planer. And just the idea of not being limited to 3/4 inch stock was it opened up an entire new world for me.
I made a box and I used 1/4 inch or 3/8 inch project board from Home Depot. It was red oak. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to know what I paid for that now. You know, like how expensive, and it was 3.5 inches wide to it. And it was like, wow.
Don't do the board foot calculations on that, man.
That's right. Cool. Yeah. So there are workarounds, but they're going to get terribly expensive. You can probably buy a planer after 2 projects of using, you know, like those little project boards.
Well, we're almost at an hour, and that's a lot longer than I expected this conversation to go. So should we call it? I think we should call it. So let us know if topical conversations like this do it for you. But also, I really, 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 everybody out there with some spare time, come up with your $1,000 list and send us a link to a Google Drive or something, because I think some people out there are probably going to nail this, and it might be easier for people who are closer to that journey. For me, I always like one thing I really love about this exercise was it brought back a lot of memories and struggles and helps me stay grounded, if you will. I say that sitting right next to an 8-inch Powermatic.
That's 8 inches?
Cha.
Oh, man.
That I got for free. But this is the type of thing that we all need to try and keep a finger on.
Accessible woodworking.
Yeah, accessible woodworking. And in the future, I really want to use this one-on-one kind of format, quick and dirty over Zoom thing, to try and talk to more people about figuring out ways of diversifying woodworking and bringing people in who might not have the means to drop thousands and thousands of dollars. Because honestly, we came up with a $1,000 list, but I think when I started woodworking, if you told me that I needed to invest $1,000, I would have laughed in your face. But that I worked my way up to that, you know. These are all things that I've picked off a little bit at a time. But it's definitely something to keep in mind that woodworking is awesome, but we need to try and be cognizant of others.
Yeah, 100% agree.
So one thing we didn't mention is group shops. And I want to get somebody in and talk about group shops. If you're somebody who runs a group shop, shoot me an email, bstrano@tauten.com, because I'd like to interview you, hopefully record it too. No pressure. But there's things that we should talk about there. There's a lot of different things. So if anyone's got ideas of different avenues that we should cover going towards this more beginner friendly, inclusive mindset, please let us know.
Cool. I dig it.
You got anything else, Barry?
No, I keep staring at your joiner, so I'm done.
All right, well, that's all for this episode of Shop Talk Live. If you have any questions or comments, I don't have the script open. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below. If you're watching on YouTube, click that thumbs up button. If you want to ask us a question that we'll answer on a regular episode with somebody more experienced and professional than either of us, send them into shoptalk@tauten.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Later, everyone.
Fine Woodworking Magazine has a long history of bringing inspiring content to our readers. You can subscribe by going to finewoodworking.com/sub.
I do have a bandsaw, a little 9-inch guy from Grizzly. Hold on, someone's knocking.
That's weird.
Yeah. One sec.
I'm going to stay rolling in case Barry gets killed. Rear, rear.